especially with the aggressiveness almost from the gun. So I think in order to bring more money into the sport and more sponsors, it would be really good to, increase that TV coverage across, and not just the World Tour races, start bringing it into point ones and point twos, and showcase, also those other continental teams that are pushing.
G'day legends, and welcome back to the Press Room Podcast presented by Zwift Legends, episode 102. Oh, we're kicking on, aren't we? How about episode 101 last week with Valtteri Bottas and Tiffany Cromwell? I hope you enjoyed that one, and no doubt we'll get them back on next year around Rattle Gravel time in Adelaide in 2025. But today's guest, we're back to one of our favourite teams in the Women's World Tour and just the World Tour in general, AG Insurance Soudal's young Tasmanian Anya Lowe. Of course, we've had to get her on. I've actually wanted to have Anya on the podcast for quite a while now, but, since her first Tour de France, which was only 4 months into her pro career, her World Tour career, she made the Tour de France squad with AG. And not only did she just get around the course, which is just crazy as a young 20-year-old, but she made the breakaway on one of the stages, and it was really that showed me that Anya, oh, she's got that white line fever, Once she steps into the game, she's ready to play. So really liked that about Anya and her development over the last 3 years, and particularly the start to her third year in 2024 has been really nice and steady and consistent. And that's kind of where we kick off the proceedings, is the pro life. We talk about 3 years in now with Anya. What does she like about being a pro? The whole lifestyle of training, living in Europe, recovering, racing, the culture change, all of those things. And Anya sort of explains the things that she thinks she does well, and some of the things she could also improve on, and not only on the bike but off the bike as well. And it's quite a good insight too. Anya's a really nice chat. And moving on from that, we also talk about her team, AG Insurance Soudal. We know they have a really exciting group of young women in their team, as an emerging development team is where they started, thanks to Natasha, of course, Natasha Naven. But what do they do well? What does the team foster, in terms of the culture, the environment? How do they make these young women in the team perform so well? They must be creating some sort of really nice and sort of development fostering environment. And Anya gives you an insight into that. And we also talk about some of the sponsors, because tell you what, they don't have any shit sponsors on their team. You know how some teams have a couple of stinkers, you might have a bad eyewear, or you got to roll around on look bikes, or Windspace wheels, something like that. Not at AG Insurance Soudal. They've got the Specialized, they've got the Oakleys, they've got all the goodies, and the safety joggers, which we know Sarah Gigante loves. Also, we also talk about some hard-hitting stuff too, guys. All right, we talk about the Women's World Tour. What does it need to improve? What does the Women's World Tour need to continue to improve as a sport? Anya provides her opinion on this, and a really good and clever answer as well, one that I really agreed with. And then we talk about a bit of gossip. I certainly love gossiping, as you all know. But Demi Vollering, her contract situation, it is just bubbling right now, isn't it? There's articles coming up left, right, and centre. What does Anya think? What does the women's peloton think of this? Is $1 million a euro per season? Is that good for the sport if someone receives that? What do you guys think? We'll hear about what Anya thinks, and we chat about that in this ep. And of course, the usual shit talk. It's going to be a cracker. Anya, absolute delight. Big fan. And let's hope she has a really good rest of the season, because she started off really well. Now, legends, Zwift. Okay, the indoor training platform, it's the only one anyone uses. The biggest cycling community is on there. Group rides, training, races, fondos, giveaways, unlocks, all of that stuff. It's all on Zwift. And in fact, if you listen closely, you can actually hear Megan in the background Zwifting away. I don't know, maybe my microphones aren't that good, but I can hear her. And also, legends, This episode is also brought to you by IGP Sport. Now, Shane Miller, GP Llama, legend and also fan of the pod, he's just dropped a video on YouTube, and you know the stuff he does, the Perfect Tech sort of rundowns, but he's covered the latest IGB Sport unit, which is the touchscreen fancy one. Check it out, pretty interesting, and you have a look at that video, and you kind of see, oh, okay, IGP Sport, they actually are making some good stuff. But it's the unit that I've used, right? It's the IGS 630. It's the older model. Now, I'm sure I will come across the newer model, but I've only used the IGS 630, sort of the button mode one. Trust me, check it out. It's $200, TPR-20. I used this instead of the Wahoo Bolt, and the Wahoo Bolt is an elite product, as we all know. So just check it out. Go to igbsport.com.au. It's definitely worth a look if you're looking for, you know, a spare computer for your gravel bike or your spare roadie or your commuter, and you don't want to spend $1 million on the Wahoo or Garmin's of the world. All right, legends, it's time to get stuck into this episode. It's 101. We've got Anya Lowe from AG Insurance Sudal. See you on the other side.
Yeah, not too bad. Just chilling at home.
Is that the wall?
Yep, this is the wall.
Is it actually bricks, or is it like a laminate thing?
Yeah, they're like real bricks. So yeah, I'm actually up in Ali's room at the moment because we're housemates up here in Girona. So it's a bit more quiet upstairs.
Yeah.
It's like real old town. So they haven't really renovated the building in probably like 300 years. So
is it just you two that live there? You and
yeah, so it's Ali, and then Kel's kind of moved in a little bit this year because they're together. And then I also live with my boyfriend Alex, who rides on the Alperson development team. And yeah, then we've got another housemate, Sean Flynn, as well, who's on DSM. So yeah.
Wow, Sean, the fifth wheel.
Yeah.
Well done, yeah. Sean. Fly the flag.
Got a lot to deal with, yeah.
That's cool. Oh, Alex, we know him. He's OG guest back in the Zwift Academy. We got all the finalists on, I think, the first one, I remember.
Oh, classic.
Yeah, I remember. Now, you're on like a bit of a break now, eh? That must be pretty nice.
Yeah, so I just finished like a big classics block. It was really good. So I usually have a scheduled break after my last race of the classics for about a week just to reset like my body and also mentally. Just calm down for a little while and reset everything for the second half of the year.
Did you find you were looking forward to the break when you got towards the last few races on your calendar? Or
Yeah, so like my initial spring program wasn't going to be too hectic, but our team, we've been plagued with a lot of illness and injury. It's been one of the worst years we've had in that regard, like so many people getting sick and having bad injuries. So then I got added into a lot of the big classics. And then Flanders, I had a bit of a nasty crash. I didn't break anything, but I like bruised a lot of the ribs on my left-hand side, and then had to race Roubaix, managed to get through that. But then after Roubaix, it was like the nail in the coffin. So I had a bit of a forced break after that one. So
I did notice that some of the races you did were different to last year. And geez, that must have been pretty, were you nervous for Roubaix considering you had, you know, the ribs? Because even if you just bruise ribs, you know, everyone knows that it just hangs around for ages.
Yeah, it's like 4 to 6 weeks, I think, that it's pretty uncomfortable. But like it was one of those things that I was told, like, it's going to be painful. There's no way that you can like negotiate that or get rid of the pain. But it's something that, unless I crash on it, which was a big if, it's not going to do any more damage. It's just going to hurt. So, I knew that, you know, if I could just try and block that out and focus on, you know, the sectors or trying to do a job or something like that, then, I just had to, just focus on other things to try and block that out. And my legs were hurting just as much by the end of the race as my ribs. So,
Well, pretty cool to just even race those as well, like ticking off all the big ones. Did you get to go into the Velodrome at the end?
Yeah, I made it in like towards the end of the race, I was actually like not n near the front group, but in a pretty good group with a few other Aussies. So yeah,
Yeah,
it was
sure.
super special when you like turn right and then right again into the velodrome and you just hear this like roar of the
Really?
crowd. Yeah, it's just like, and then I just got goosebumps like all over my body. I was like, I can't believe I'm here right now. Like, and then you get like super emotional, like once you cross the finish line, or even when you hear the bell being
The bell,
rung, it's like, oh. And then you finish, and there's like music playing. There's a massive DJ in the middle of the velodrome. And then
Oh my
you
God.
just like pull over and hug all your teammates, and everyone
Yeah.
just like starts crying because, not because they're sad, just because there's so much emotion. And like, yeah, it's super special.
Wow, that's crazy, eh? Like it's I just love the theater, particularly on like the men's side. I've seen it. I think some of the JCO girls as well in the first edition when you're out of the time limit, but you still make it to the finish, you know? Like I think Jess Allen and the I can't forget their name from Trinidad and Tobago, but they made it in, you know, when the gates were almost closed, and Cyrus Monk as well. He was the one this year in the men's. Like, just you know how special it is when people are trying to finish even when they're out of time limit.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. Like, I was lucky that I wasn't too far behind, but yeah, it's the same feeling for anyone, I guess, if you, well, unless you win the race, of course, but if you, like anybody just finishing that race and going into that atmosphere, it's just, I can't really compare it to anything I've done before. There's so much hype around the race, and Roubaix is one of those races that I've watched ever since I was a kid. Like, would stay up like the whole night and just watch it, because it's one of those races, it doesn't matter what the race situation is, like it's just exciting, there's something happening. So yeah, I have to say like Roubaix and the Tour is are the ones that I've just stayed up and watched as a kid. So that realization of actually being there and ticking that one off was pretty cool.
Ticking them off before 23 as well. And I mean, I was watching the women's one, but you know, you don't get to see the second and third groups, but 57th, that's pretty good for your first one. Not bad at all. Hang on, I'm just looking at the first cycling stats. Oh yeah, in a solid group. Nice. Oh, here with Georgie and Josie as well, and Grace in that group, right? I'm
Yeah,
just ahead,
bit of
just ahead.
banter.
No. God, that's awesome. Yeah, how good. Wow. Super sick. You know, when I'm we watch it at my house here and invite some of my close mates around, and I've started this tradition where I make this really shit dessert, you know, and it's Roubaix themed, right? And I don't think I've posted it on my page, but anyway, last year was okay, right? It was all right. I make like the Arenberg Forest. And
What did you
so
put, graveling cupcakes or something?
Well, I'm pretty good because last year I went pretty budget and I just got like a block of chocolate and I made a brownie, right? So brownie in a pan and like a rectangle pan, and so that was basically the Arenberg layout. And then I just got a block of Whittaker's chocolate. Ali would know that one, and stuck it in the middle. So that was the cobbled path, right? And you
Yeah,
know, I had to
right.
kind of saw a couple of mil out of the brownie, so the cobble sort of sat in there.
Yeah.
And then I made like a little flag with like Arenberg. And so that was last year's. So I'm thinking, how can I improve that? So this year I wasn't happy. Oh, actually, I got some green sprinkles and I bought a silver spray to try and like edible spray, to try and spray the chocolate so it would go kind of gray. It didn't, it just kind of made it sparkly brown. So I wanted to work on that. So this time, similar thing, except I went with lemon cake. I put a block of old gold in there because old gold, you know, that's kind of got, it's pretty rounded. You know, that's a chocolate for
Yeah.
Europeans listening. I felt
Yeah.
they looked similar cobbles. And then I wanted the color of the cobbles. So I bought fondant with some black food dye.
Oh, stop it. This is what I should have been having in my week off.
Yes, I'll show you. I'll send you the photo later, but it's just I did half a drop of black food dye into the pure white fondant, and I just like mixed it with my hands, and it turned like literally the perfect color of the cobbles, like when
Yeah.
they're dry. And then I laid it over the old gold, and then got a skewer, made them, you know. And I that wasn't enough. I had to make some big cobbles. So I had some leftover cake and I just kind of like cut a square of cake and wrapped it in the fondant. And that was the winner because they looked like once you put them in the fridge. Anyway, that was the dessert. So the traditions are really good.
Yeah, it sounds like you put your absolute blood, sweat, and tears into that dessert.
Oh, I'm trying to. For you guys racing, I've got to throw what I can do at it, and that's making a dessert that no one eats, but you can appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, Anya, enough about my desserts. Third year. This is your third year with AJ. It's gone
I
pretty quick.
signed, I did a mid-year transfer in 2022. Yeah,
Yes,
so
I remember.
two and a
Yes.
half years, yeah.
Mid-year transfer, and then it was like a you're straight into the tour.
Yeah, thrown straight into the deep end.
Oh, and you too. I remember when you were on the attack and you got on that breakaway on that stage. I just remember thinking, because my friend Cassia was the one who was of outgoing of
Yeah.
from AG. And then you sort of came in. And I remember when you were in that race and watching you just have a crack, because as everyone could imagine, it would have been so. Oh, that's the deep end, right? So the fact that you're just having a go, and Pino was really good on the commentary for that particular stage because just captured it. But yeah, 3 years in. What do you think? What do you think about how you're going and in the cycling, the pro life? What's it like?
Yeah, it's pretty surreal to be honest. Like, I've been in the sport a long time. I started when I was around 8 or 9 on the velodrome, just doing the Tassie track carnivals. So it was always a dream of mine to be here. And yeah, in 2022, within the space of about 4 weeks, not only was I going from a club team onto a continental team like in Europe, but I went in those 4 weeks finding out, like having a contract signed for the next 2 years and then also getting selected to do the Tour de France. So yeah, it was a massive whirlwind. And it was a really quick learning curve as well. But yeah, I was lucky that a lot of positive things happened like at the right time that allowed me to be in the position to like take those offers. And then when I went to the tour, I was just thinking like in the mindset of just, let's give it an absolute crack and see what happens. And yeah. And I've been trying to take that similar mindset into these next 2 years and just try and be like a bit of a sponge and just soak up as much like information and learn as much as possible to help me like have a sustainable career. So yeah, last year I had a quite a few ups and downs. Didn't have a great start to the year and then got injured like halfway through, but then this year, yeah, we've tried to change up the approach and give a few different races a crack. So instead of doing more of the Ardennes hilly races, I've decided to have a go at all the cobbled classics, and it's been something that I've really enjoyed, but I've still got a lot of learning to do. Yeah.
No, you've done really well. I think it seems like for particularly people maybe in their first 3 or 4 years, getting off to a good start is a real key thing, isn't it? Like just getting on the front foot early. You guys had such a good summer and you had a really good start. Your TT was really good at nationals.
Thanks.
Just keeps the momentum rolling, hey?
Yeah, it's something that's hard to get right, especially for people that sign a contract towards the end of the year. Like there's a lot of planning, like you've got to move your whole living situation over to Europe, and that does take a lot of stress. So like doing that and then also doing like your pre-season training, and then there's always the talk like, oh, am I good for nationals in summer? Like it's really important for some people, like racing at home in front of their, a lot of people that they know, and you want to race well in Australia. It feels good to do that. But then balancing that to like be able to have a consistent form over the European season, especially for if you're on a team that values that a lot, which most teams would. So yeah, it's a tricky one. Just adjusting to that new lifestyle and trying to be professional for a whole 9 or 10 months of a season rather than just those times that you peak in Australia was something that's really different.
Okay. What do you think you do right as a professional cyclist, and what do you think is, what do you think you could improve on?
I think I train quite well. Like, there's definitely a lot of room for improvement, but I think, like, I'm quite a sustainable person. I try not to, like, overtrain, and I think I recover quite well as well. So I'm starting to understand the sacrifices and exactly what it takes to be able to perform well on a world tour level. Every single year, the level's rising, like, quite significantly, and it's every race is becoming more and more competitive, and there's more people pushing into the final in all of the races. So you really, like, you can't afford to get away with too much. Like, you can't slack off in your training and all that. But every single person that's there is pretty much training how they need to be. So for me, like, yeah, also having a good balance to sustain that training throughout the whole year without getting sick and injured is a key thing. And I think that's something I do okay, but yeah, there's a lot of things that I still need to improve on.
Okay. What's one thing that you can think of that you
Oh,
could
for
work
sure,
on?
the positioning in Europe, it's so difficult when you're coming from Australia. Like,
What explain the difference? Because most Australian Oceania people would know, but maybe the European people would be like, "What are you talking about?"
yeah, coming from Australia or New Zealand, you're doing, if you, especially if you're doing like NRS races, you're just riding against, like, a good day, 30 or 40 people would rock up, and the roads aren't technical at all. There's no twisty descents, there's no corners, the roads are probably four times as wide with good surfaces. Like, so you go from that to, you get really good at being lazy in a race. When you're racing in Australia, you don't have to fight the whole time for a position. Within 10 seconds, you can close your eyes and get to the front and do what you need to do. It's not a skill that we're, like, learning as a junior, or somebody that's progressing, through their riding. But as soon as you come to Europe, especially racing countries like Belgium or the Netherlands, you're racing on these almost bike path roads, and you got 160 girls fighting for one corner. So, like, everybody knows, especially with the radios, okay, there's a climb coming up or a cobbled section. I need to be top 10, top 15 wheels around this corner, in order to get through. But it's actually having the skill set to do it. Like, everybody knows they need to be there, but it's knowing when to move up, actually being in a position 5Ks before that, so that you can, like, you've got enough space to go from 30th to 15th. Like, that's something that, yeah, you can only learn through doing those races. So it takes some time.
Oh, yeah, massive, massive differences. Just the field numbers too, 160 is crazy. 160,
Yeah.
like, yeah, like you said, good day. Nationals, might have 60 on the start line and maybe only
Yeah.
really 15 who could actually, compete. So big differences there. Of those things, so positioning is one thing you can work on. How do you work on that? Like, is it when you're in the race, are you following certain riders that you know are usually pretty good at positioning, or are you trying to be like pay a bit more attention to the course profiles before the stage, or having cues out there? Like, how do you improve on that as someone who's emerging?
Yeah, it's a combination of everything, but the only way to improve on it is to just continue to do those races that are challenging for you. But for me, I'm really lucky that I have some amazing teammates, most of whom are younger than me, as well, they're Dutch and Belgium, and they've grown up in that environment where they're racing, like, these similar style races since they're 14, 15 years old. So for them, it's like a skill that's just been acquired, and they can do it so easily. So for me, it's like trying to follow them through the race, completely trusting in what they're doing, and yeah, learning and listening to what they're saying to me, and just watching how they do it. And then the more times you do it, yeah, it just becomes a little bit easier each time. But it's also a huge confidence thing. Like, a lot of these times, you're just in your head, there's a voice saying, "Oh, I'm gonna crash." Like, yeah, it's and so you just got to try and focus on the process of what you're doing, and yeah, it will
Wow.
come.
Wow. Cycling's bloody hard, isn't it? It can be bloody hard.
Yeah.
Now, AG Insurance Soudal is the team, and really exciting team for. Wow, it's just fun to watch. I think particularly from Oceania,
based people, just because there's so many people to support. It's really cool. With the team, you know, what's something that AG Insurance Sudal do that really well in regards to supporting you guys as riders, you know, maybe outside of the races? What is it? Is it, it might be something really small or something they do all the time that's just nice, like simple, like, you know, what do they do just that's nice to support you guys?
Yeah, we're lucky to have a really good DS with Yolene, who's one of the best, female cyclists in the history of the sport, coming from Belgium. So, yeah, she's there, and we're lucky to have a really good culture off the bike, where we're really like a family, like a really good team. So, yeah, she also has a big part to play in that. Like, we feel really comfortable with each other off the bike. We get along like a house on fire. Like, yeah, it's really good. So we have this really relaxed environment off the bike, and then we can really go into the races and trust each other. Whether it goes to plan or not, we know that the girls are going to fully commit to the team plan. And yeah, it just takes the pressure off a little bit when everybody's super comfortable with each other like that. And that's something that the team has built over a few years. And I think that's something that you could also see when we race Tour Down Under this year. We have that team culture behind the scenes. And even with three new riders that had never met, like, I know Sarah really well, we go a long way back, but yeah, she'd never ridden with any of the other girls, and neither had another two riders that joined the team. So yeah, but immediately we could gel really well together, and then that does show in results as well.
No, you guys were well, that was something. And TDU, you could easily, maybe if you were riding with people you didn't like or it was just a bit edgy, you know, there were often quite a lot of times that during TDU where you had to go back for Sarah or yourself or Ali or Kim and to the court. And maybe after the third or fourth time, if the culture wasn't so good, you'd probably just go, I'm not doing that one more time. You get frustrated. So that's a good, yeah, I like that. And it does come from the team, doesn't it? It was just the way they structure everything and maybe foster that environment. That's really good to know. Now, your sponsors, some great equipment, right? And the bikes are great. All know Specialized. That's dream. But what about the other equipment or just general sponsors? I want to know what's something that you receive from the team sponsors that you really like.
Yeah, we're super lucky. I think we've got some of the best equipment in the peloton, to be honest. Yeah, it's super privileged with the equipment that we get. I don't know. Do I have to pick a favorite?
Pick one. Yeah, I think Sarah said the shoes, you know, even though she didn't have them on.
Yeah, safety job.
Good. I didn't get the hint.
Very safe.
Yeah. Are they like a sneaker?
Yeah, they're like a sneaker. I think they're like a work shoe. For like industries and stuff where they also come in sneakers, and we get these pair of like kind of like sandals, but the bottom are like, it's like a gumboot with a tread so that you don't slip, but they're slides. Yeah, but I don't know if they're my favorite. Maybe they're, you know, safe, but I'd have to say from our sponsor AG, we get every year at our team presentation, we get like something from JBL. So like a year ago, we got a JBL speaker. So that's really cool. And it's like a small one and it fits in your back pocket. So
yeah,
I reckon that's my favorite thing. You know, I just bang the tunes out on a training ride when I'm with my friends and stuff. So yeah, that would all like have it on the team bus before the race.
Yeah.
I think that's, So cheers, AG.
Quality. JBL is good. So is JBL one of the sponsors or AG just purchase it for the riders?
I think they just do it for the riders, Or maybe I'm not sure, maybe they have a deal, like the sponsor with JBL. But, and it's got a little AG logo on it. So, it's cool.
That's awesome. Okay, that's cool. You also got Oakleys too. And I noticed that you really like the Kato's.
Yeah, I love the Kato's, but it has to be a specific race for them. Like, I wouldn't wear the Kato's if I'm doing a mountain stage. So
What are you wearing then?
I wear the, I think they're the Sutros if I'm wearing a like the bigger ones. Yeah,
Now the
if I'm
Sutro's
doing
with the
climbing.
frame underneath or the lights without the frame underneath?
No, the lights. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah. So that's like, I don't know, in my head, it's like breathes a bit better and they don't
Yeah.
fog up if I'm climbing. But then for sure, the Kato's when I'm doing any kind of a flat race that's fast. I don't know. They just feel fast. I think it's in my
Yeah.
head, but yeah.
Oh, I like that. That's cool. It, different glasses give you a different persona.
Yeah.
I have a pair of the, I've got so many sunnies, right? And I've already plugged it on the pod and I say it every time. But once upon a time, I was Oakley 2021, Oakley Australia, Oakley Sport Salesman of the Year. I sold the most sunglasses in Australia for Oakley Sport. And I won many pairs of sunglasses and I won $2,000 for that, believe it or not.
Jeez, that's impressive. So, what would be the sunnies that you sell the most, do you think, from Oakley? Like
Well,
cycling
I was
sunglasses.
working in a like a bicycle clothing apparel store, and so most people would just want to like look cool, but I would always recommend the Radars because
Yeah, classic.
they look good. If you do another sport, like if you're running or you play cricket or tennis, I reckon
Yeah.
because they got that long rubber sleeve, they just don't move. And then
Yeah.
I think when you take them off and put them in your helmet, I think they look the best in the helmet, which is also a
Yeah.
consideration.
Do you flip your sunnies upside down when you put them in the helmet or straight?
If I have my clear lenses in, I do straight, but if they're the different lenses, like colored lenses, I go upside down. I don't know why.
Oh,
Yeah.
nice. Yeah.
But the reason I brought it up is because I got given a pair of the encoders, you know, those gold ones that are a bit la-di-da.
Yeah.
Or the 24K is the actual lens color. But I've worn them like four times because they're so nice. I could only find a particular race or a group ride to wear them on. So I've actually never wear them. It's the same thing. Like you wear the encoders on certain days and the Sutro lights.
Yeah, I actually managed to convince one of the youngest riders on the team that you save 20 watts if you wear the Kato's, if you do over 45k an hour. She fully bought
She wears them in the TT. Oh,
She was, so every flat race for a while,
yeah.
she was wearing them, and then it was so funny when she figured out that that's like impossible, but
Well, I mean, I reckon encoders would be the most aero.
yeah, we'd have to test it out in the wind tunnel and see.
Well, Sunnies, they are very good, and I feel bad for the other teams that have to wear the poor brands. Now, okay, so it would be more of a tricky question. I've seen these anyway. Improving the Women's World Tour. Now, the Women's World Tour and women's professional cycling in general has grown. It's grown so fast. Like you said, even with the talent, riders getting better, riders getting paid a little bit more because more sponsors. The tour has been crazy for it and things like that. But what do you think the sport could use now that would improve it? You know, like I mentioned in my example, you know, a standalone under 23 world championship road race, which is coming, but that's one example which would be things. But do you have anything for me?
Yeah, for sure. I think this has improved slightly over the last few years, or it has improved quite a lot, but I still think there's more room for more TV coverage. So our races already are not as long as the men's, everyone knows that. And I don't think the answer would be to increase the race distance. Our racing's different. It's more exciting, more aggressive. Well, not more aggressive, but yeah, the style of
It
women's
is.
racing is, it is aggressive. So especially when we're racing distances, some of the classics are still only 120, 130 kilometers. So when you're only showing the last hour of that race, you're not encapturing the whole race and what's happened, especially with the aggressiveness almost from the gun. So I think in order to bring more money into the sport and more sponsors, it would be really good to, increase that TV coverage, across, and not just the World Tour races, start bringing it into, those point pros, point ones and point twos, and showcase, Also those other continental teams that are pushing as well. So I think that's still something that can be improved. Yeah, and that's going to help women's cycling.
Absolutely. Yeah, great point. The easiest example is like Roubaix and Flanders, and get to see the whole race. I think Roubaix starts at like kilometer 80 or 70. I mean, it's not even all the sectors. And like 2 years
No.
ago, remember Lizzie Deignan's win? You turn on the TV and she's got a 2 minute lead, and there's
Yeah.
like 10 riders left in the peloton, and you missed all this amazing action. Like,
Yeah.
very good
Like
point.
we also have, the fight for the breakaway at the start of the
Yeah.
race, except our race is more condensed because we have a shorter race distance. So the amount of action that there is in between moments, like key moments of the race, is a less time. So it would make sense to increase the TV coverage to, be able to understand, what's happened throughout the whole race, or how there's you switch on the TV, there's only 30 girls left in a cobbled classic. Like, what happened to get it there? And yeah, also the really key strong domestiques that are
Exactly.
working before
Yes.
40, 50 Ks to go, like also to showcase, yeah, the role that those riders have played into the race as well, and understand like the team dynamics a little bit more for the sport would be good, I think.
For sure. Celebrate those characters that you can, and only in the recent, maybe the last 10 years in the men's sport, they've really been celebrated those early workers like de Klerk or riders like that, where they're on the front in the tourists, for example. As soon as the coverage starts, oh, there's de Klerk, the tractor. And then someone watching at home would be like, oh, the tractor. Yeah, oh, there he is. He's there again. And on the women's side, we're missing that. There's tractors there that need to be, that need to be highlighted and people can get behind. That's like another thing. Yeah, it's a very good point. So let's hope it continues to improve, because I can remember Amstel Gold. Actually, it's Amstel, Flesch, and Flanders. I've said this a few times on the pod before, but back in the day, the only coverage was at the fixed camera at the finish line.
Yeah.
So you could tune in with like half an hour for the race to go. You're following on Twitter, usually, to see what's going on, and you just have the fixed cam at the top of the hill, and you're just waiting to see,
Yeah. There's little dots in the distance.
yeah.
Yeah, and like I said, it has come a long way in the last few years, and
It has.
I'm really privileged with the time that I have come into the sport where already so much has improved, but I still think there's improvement to come. So and I think showcasing, the majority of our races would be a really good improvement.
Well said. Well said. Now, another interesting topic. I actually don't think this has been talked about enough. Is Demi Vollering's current situation? And I wanted to see the perspective from current rider. But firstly, is like rider contracts and all that sort of rumors stuff. Do you and your teammates, do you talk about it? Like, are you? You do.
Yeah,
Okay.
for
Okay.
sure. Yeah.
Because
Like,
juicy.
especially these last few weeks, we've been in the team house in Belgium. We're just chilling there together for a month. So you do run out of things to talk about. So especially when there's a bit of drama in the peloton, everyone does have a bit of a yarn about it.
Okay. It's good to know, because Demi, I thought it was, first of all, it was really interesting, the Lotto and Lotto Kopecky and Demi Vollering, the dynamic in the team is very interesting, especially after last year. Kind of seemed like it was sort of fine now, but with them both being out of contract up until a couple of weeks ago, with Kopecky re-signing, it just made it really interesting to see who would stay, who would go. But Demi's like staring down the decision of, staying with the team for perhaps a little bit less money, or moving to maybe a team that's not as well known, or maybe not as well equipped yet, for a much bigger salary, considerably much bigger salary. And you're reporting like she's been offered $1 million a season for
Yeah,
some
it's a lot,
period.
eh?
That's a lot of money, and I've been told by a few different people that Annemiek was getting the highest ever, around 450 in her heyday, 450K, and that's euro as well. So that's still a lot of money, but nowhere near what she really was worth.
Yeah.
But what do you think? What do you think $1 million a season, whether she gets that or not, is that I don't know, is that a good thing? Does that lift all the boats sort of thing? Or do you think it creates a bigger gap between the top and the lowest paid riders? What do you think?
If I'm honest, I think Demi was is deserving of that contract for sure. Yeah, if you look at her season last year, she won the biggest race of the season, the Tour de France. Absolutely dominated there. And then if you also look at her classic season, she was incredibly consistent, like with Lotta as well. Especially in the Ardennes Classic, she was just cleaning up. So yeah, I think she did the triple there.
She did.
Yeah. So yeah, I think she's super deserving of a contract like that. And yeah, I don't know if it's true or if it's just a rumor, but yeah, I think a rider of her caliber is worth that kind of money. But at the same time, the sport also needs to improve on a few things to help their not be such a gap between riders like Demi getting paid a million, hypothetically, a million euro, and then some riders on zero. So we need to try and make it, yeah, so that everybody's getting paid and can afford to do the things that they need to do to be professional. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's a
there's
tricky one.
again a point to that Cyclist Alliance survey that you can go and check out anytime. The Cyclist Alliance is like the women's sort of it's like an advisory group that do a lot for the women's pros, but they do a survey and actually, there's still a considerable number of professional, even at Conti level, that are getting paid nothing. And they're racing still some of the biggest races as well with the World Tour women. So that's pretty crazy. But I was just looking at Emmy's season last year. She won
Yeah, it's
Strada,
pretty incredible.
she won Doise d'Or. Second in Flanders, oh, she flopped that. Second in Brabantspil, first in Amstel, first in Flèche, first in Liège, second overall Vuelta, two stage wins.
Yeah, with the controversial P stop there or something.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Yes, that was her and Annemiek were having that spicy meal
Yeah.
in Spain. Then
Yeah.
Azalea, second there, stages. Volta Burgos, she won that. Oh my God. Second at Swiss, washed. Netherlands road race. Oh my God. Tour de France, at stage in the Jersey. Second road race at Worlds. That's a crazy. That is ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
You can understand why teams are willing to start offering this kind of money in order to
Yeah.
secure a rider like that in the long term. So, yeah,
100%.
I
And
mean, it was always going to happen. There's always going to be a rider that's, get and break that barrier at some stage. And I think why not Demi? Like, if you look at her season last year, you can see why someone would be offering something like that.
Yeah, for sure. And like that might be a marker for future stars coming up. And someone has a very similar season, say they win all the classics. Maybe they don't do the tour, but they win all the classics and they say, okay, contract is up. I've won Flesh, I've won Amstel, won Doise d'Or, won Strada. Demi's earning a mil. She won those sort of races. Let's target half of that salary. Now that becomes the benchmark that whereas before it might have been, oh, well, Annemiek won this, this, and this. She gets full 50. So then that ceiling, I mean, how could you ever ask for more than that, what Annemiek gets, So maybe
Yeah.
with that higher contract, it then maybe allows others to ask for more, and rightly so. Oh, it's so interesting though. And actually, I read today that it looks like FDJ are the ones in the box seat, according to
Really?
Giro
Wow.
Scognamiglio from Ligetta Della Sport. I think that's how you say it. But he's always right. He's the man. If I listen to anyone, it's that guy. And he said that now, not UAE, not Visma, but FDJ. So that would be juicy. That would be
I
juicy.
reckon there's a few teams knocking on the door, though, for sure.
Oh, wow. Yeah, absolutely. Although I'd like to see, I was really hoping it would be UAE because I'm thinking they wouldn't just stop with Demi. They'd come back next year and that's like the coffers are open. We know that I'm sure they've got money to somewhere unlocked.
Yep.
But anyway, now, You're on your break. How long have you got? 2 weeks?
No, so I've started riding again, yeah, the last few days. I had about 6 days off, so yeah, just to like stop the pain a little bit. So slowly getting into it now, yeah.
Okay. And do you find it easy to not ride your bike?
Yeah, when I'm tired
Cool.
like that, for sure. It was really easy for me to switch off this week and just like both mentally and physically and just, have a complete break for a week. So, yeah. And now I feel super motivated to get stuck into another training block.
Oh, nice. That's good. Okay. Now, I was thinking about this question just today, right? I was on the driving range, actually, just hitting a couple of shots for you golf fans, which is zero. It's just me. Oh, Greg's going through my bag up there. Anyway, if you could bring any shop to Girona from Australia, what would it be? And like, it could be okay, let's do a shop that sells like a shop that would be in a mall, not food. And
Oh, well, there goes all my shops.
no, hang on, but then also a food shop. So one of
Also,
each.
geez.
So you could bring like Rivers.
Oh, the food shop for sure would be a Coles or a Woolies, just like an
Oh.
Australian supermarket where you like, and it has to be the Coles or Woolies like in Devonport, Tassie, because I've memorized where the aisles of that Coles and Woolies. So, and yeah, with the international food section too. But just like it, that would just be so good just to do my shopping there and not go and get bits and pieces from every like different supermarket, yeah, in Girona. But yeah, so a Coles and a Woolies. And then,
That's a big, I mean, that's kind of a cheat. Just cheating a little bit. You're taking the entire
supermarket,
it's supermarket, but I'll let it. That's a good answer though.
yeah, for sure. Oh, it's just, yeah, that's like one of my favorite things when I go home is to go back and just go to the supermarket again for the first time, and it's just like can have a massive sigh of relief and just get everything you need
Love
and
it.
things that like you haven't had for 9 or 10 months as well. So
Oh, like
yeah.
what though? What's an example?
Oh, like
Like
I don't
crumpets.
know, you, oh, I can't put it down. Like if you go into like the dairy section, just like getting Chobani yogurt, for example,
Nice.
is like
Okay.
something you don't get in Spain or in Europe. Like
Really?
yogurts here are good, but just as an example, you just have the Chobani and that's
Yeah.
like, yeah,
They're
it's just
good.
like, oh, I miss this.
Okay.
Yeah, or like, yeah, stuff like that. But then I reckon I'd have a surf shop
Oh.
in Spain. Like I really like going, because I spent a bit of time on the Sunshine Coast when I was studying uni.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I used to love just having a stroll in the surf shop. So yeah, that would be
Ooh.
nice. And just
Yeah.
like the clothing and stuff like that. That would be
Yep.
cool.
That's coming back into, I mean, I don't really know anything about clothing fashion, but I think the surfing stuff's coming back in. Not that it ever went out, but I think it kind of went in the shadows a bit. Now it's resurfacing. I sort of saw a friend of mine who was wearing a Billabong. Actually, my friend Sarah was wearing a Billabong jumper the other day. And I was like, that's kind of cool. I kind of want one.
Yeah, I love the surf clothes, like the baggy t-shirts and stuff. It's just so comfy. Yeah, definitely my choice of fashion.
Wow. Okay. Well, you never know. Maybe it might find itself in Girona one day. All right, legends, that's another episode of the Press Room Podcast presented by Zwift. Done and dusted. Anya Lowe, what a champion. Follow her on Instagram. Follow her progress because she is an emerging talent and a super nice young lady. And tell you what, that household with Ali Wollaston in the house, Kel's sniffing around as well. Jeez, up to mischief. They need Sarah in there too, don't they? Really? That's quite the household. But anyway, they're all legends. We hope they do well. I'll see you next week for maybe a little bit of Colombian action for 103. Catch ya.